Welcome to Enlightenment of Change with Connie Whitman of Whitman & Associates. Here's Connie.
Welcome to Enlightenment of Change on webtalkradio.com. I'm your host, Connie Whitman. Thanks so much for joining us this week. Now, as you listen to the show, I get it, everyone, right? Change, especially if we don't choose the change or the path we're on, it can be a little bit discerning and a little bit give you that knot in the stomach, right? Change is here. So to help you navigate that change, in the show notes, you'll have the link for my communication style assessment. That's my gift to you. As I've said before, you'll receive two reports. One will spotlight your natural superpowers and really how people just see you and perceive you. Kind of important to know. Flip side, your lowest score, you'll also receive a report on that, which is typically a blind spot. So really pay attention to that report. I think it'll give you some really cool insight into how people who don't think and communicate like you, maybe how they're perceiving you. So again, check it out. My gift to you and those links, that link is in the show notes. Now, my motivational quote today is by Bruce Daggy. And Bruce says, let's build wellness rather than treat disease. To me, this was such a simple quote, yet, wow, filled with so much truth. You know, many of my clients, obviously, you guys know, are banks and credit unions. And you can imagine that most of the discussions are about the importance of our financial well-being. But you know what? We also discuss the critical importance of having that healthy mind, body, spirit connection that needs to be in place before we can actually step up and live our best life. And not only live and survive, but go into that thrive mode. And without good health, we can't earn the money that we need to support our family and do all the things that we're here to do or hope to do. Well, today my guest is Julie Mann, aka the Habit Fixer. Julie works with women over 50, helping them grow from relationship breakup to regaining their confidence so they can flourish, thrive, and age well. Now, she started working as an accredited hypnotherapist back in 2005, and then a year or so later, trained as a life coach and EFT practitioner, becoming a brand ambassador for the B Corp Arbonne, and being able to help people with their health inside and out, that whole body, mind, skin thing, with cutting edge products has enabled her to support people and the environment, which is also an important piece of the equation for Julie. She's passionate about acting. She's a hoot. And has been doing it for over 40 years now. Julie's work includes touring theaters, working at London's National Theatre, BBC Schools Radio, and being the voice of IKEA and voicing characters for CBBC Animation, Funky Fables. Julie believes and coaches that when you change your habits, you really can change your life. So please help me welcome my good friends and just hysterical, amazing, wonderful human, Julie, to the show. So Jules, thanks for being on.
Oh my goodness. Connie Whitman, it's always an absolute joy to talk to you.
Back at you, sister. She's from across the ponds where my in-laws are from, where they grew. So I love my Brits in my life. All right. So here's my first question, because you really are brilliant at what you do. How have you changed your life? Because I think your story can inspire others to make the changes that you've made and do it through this, you know, this place of love and joy.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I am now 65 years old. I became 65 a few weeks ago. And, you know, when you get to 65... If you're lucky enough to get to 65, any of you that are listening, then you've got to go through some changes, right? Some of them happen and you don't want them to happen, and it's really about who you're being with that change. But the things that happened in my life, I started off as a young girl. I was very, I was quite shy. I was a little bit scared around my dad. I was a very good girl, in inverted commas, and I always tried to do my best, but I never kind of felt that I really fitted in. And I found that my passion was really becoming someone else. So I started doing amateur dramatics, and I love that because I felt actually, quite frankly, that I wasn't quite enough. And I think that's a common issue for lots of people, that we feel in some way inadequate or that we shouldn't be ourselves. And what I have learned and that's through changing my habits, is that being ourselves is the best thing we can ever do. And actually, the world is really crying out for us to be ourselves. So I changed many things, including the way I've thought about myself, my self-worth. But also I had lots of habits that really weren't serving me, like drinking a lot, binge eating, smoking 30 cigarettes a day, being in relationships with men who really weren't great for me, but clearly I attracted them to learn some sort of lesson. So then got married, and then divorce happened. So really, a lot of those things, those changes came because in the end, it just got too painful for me to carry on with the behavior I had. You know, it just was really killing me in so many ways, not just not just physically, perhaps, but also, mind, body, skin, you name it, the whole gambit. So I think that's the thing, that people imagine that change is that sometimes change comes out of consciously choosing it, but sometimes it's only when things get really, really bad that we decide enough is enough, and then start to do what it takes to have a different experience of life and of ourselves. Yeah.
A couple of things, right? Good is the enemy of great. And when things are good, we go, oh, they're good. We don't really choose change because it's good. When things get bad, it's like, oh man, I've got to change something now. So I think good really is the enemy of becoming our greatest self, because we become complacent when things are comfortable. And I'm not saying that's necessarily a bad thing. I just think we have to be mindful of, am I truly living my life's purpose and all of those things? Or am I kind of coasting a little bit because things are good, right? So just pay attention to that. The other thing you said, which I thought was really insightful, that when you started to look at your life and the people that you were attracting that really weren't good for you, men in this case, that's a pattern, right? And that you were able to step back through your research and studies and all the things that you started doing for yourself, right? Your self-growth and your self-loving, that you realize that, oh, I have this pattern that I keep doing over and over. And the other thing you said that I think was insightful, and I want to make sure everybody heard it, is that you identified the pattern, which is, I think, half the battle. But then you did something about it, that you realized, what am I supposed to learn from this pattern or this person or this situation or whatever it is, so that I can grow into the next, hopefully the more beautiful person that we should become, right? Yeah. So you said a couple of really important things in there. I just wanted to make sure everybody heard that.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think sometimes that just taking the first step to change is the hardest thing. And I think probably most of us, I think actually it's more common for people to be motivated away from pain than it is to be motivated towards pleasure. I'm definitely someone who things have to get really bad before I'll do anything about it. But I know that that's habit I've had, and I can consciously choose to do things differently. But that's my kind of default setting, to wait till it's bad. But I know the signs now, because because of the work that I've done. But it is that first step, and that can seem so scary. But the alternative is, of course, the impact it's having on us. And I think when we get present to what that really is, which is scary in itself, that, you know, it's so huge often that we decide to do something about it. And some people never really get there. They're on their deathbed, perhaps, and they think, if only.
And you know, I try to tell my kids, don't have regrets. Doesn't mean you have to do everything. But if you're on a fence about something and it's gnawing at you for a few days, you know, don't say, it's too much work, or I don't know. Maybe I'm afraid to do it. 5 years from now, look back and say, ugh, what if I had done it? You know, the shoulda, woulda, couldas. Don't do that to yourself. Again, discern, right? Discern what the situation is, and then do you want to move forward? And the other thing you said that I think is important, we all have choice. And I think we forget that sometimes, that we don't have choice. And I'll just share myself. I've always been a control freak, dangerously so. and thinking that the harder I work, well, the more money I'll make. The harder I work, the better I can take care of my family. The harder I work, well, at some point, you know, there's only 24 hours in a day, and at what cost to my health, to relationships, and all those things. So it until I learned to surrender, and that was a big word for me and a big effort to not control everything, because that it was scary for me to not have control of all the balls in the air. What do you mean, give up that ball? Are you crazy? Like, to me, that was crazy talk. And until I worked on myself to surrender, and the funniest thing is, as soon as I surrendered, more good things entered my life. I wasn't looking down. I started looking up. Beautiful things start happening, right? I changed, my relationships changed, my business grew. And yet, that was a hard lesson. So that's just another example, I think. And I don't know that it's only women, though, Julie, right? Because I think men try to control too, right?
Absolutely. But the thing is, we can't control anything outside of ourselves. We can't control the weather. We can't control what anyone else thinks or their behavior. The only thing we can control is what's going on inside our body and what we do with that. So, what you said about choice, we always have a choice. Yes, we do. And sometimes we don't like the choices we have. You know, and that's, you know, actually accepting that, you know, there is, you know, there are limited choices, perhaps. So there are always more choices than we think there are when we really, really open it up. But I think that's the thing, isn't it? That the more we resist are the things that we can't change, the more painful it is for us, really. And the more stuck we're not really stuck, but we appear to be stuck.
Yeah. Or we feel stuck. Absolutely. Yeah. You're making me laugh. There's more choices. Go to the paint store. You know, I remember when we moved in here a few years ago and we were painting, and I'm like, all right, I want a beige. And we went in and there's about 20,000 different beiges. Can I have three options, please? A light, a medium, and a dark, and I'll go from there. Right. But we really have more choices, I think, than we realize at the time, because we can't see the forest from the trees, right? We're kind of stuck in the mud a little bit. Why? So, I mean, this is what you do for a living. You talk to people, you coach people, you try to give them tools and resources to create the change they're looking for. And again, to hopefully do it with grace and ease. Why do you think, or why have you seen that change is just really challenging for people? Like, what are some of the key themes that you see over and over again?
Because people don't want to be uncomfortable, do they, Connie? It's stepping out onto a skinny branch. That's a scary place to be. You know, we like, as human beings, we like familiar. But the other thing is that the brain is like a computer, and it wants to give us what we've already got. It learns a habit. It gets really, really good at it. It's the expert. It's actually in charge. Yeah. And unless we, you know, work with the brain, we're not going to change anything, because it is the master. And in many ways, it's a good job that we do have that ability to create a habit, and then we're on automatic, because otherwise we'd have to learn to walk again every day or learn to read, or, you know, so it serves us well. But on the other hand, it also keeps these old habits in place, and we can't change an old habit, but we can replace it with a new one. When I say replace it, I mean the habit's still there, but we can choose to focus. It's about focus. So instead of focusing on the old habit, it's about choosing to focus on a new habit that's going to give us a different result. But it takes time to build a new habit. It's about consistently, doing that new habit and doing it more than the old habit. So then in the end, the old habit loses its power. So it's like a computer program. You put in same software, you're always going to get the same result. You know, that's a fact. It's the same with the brain.
So, you know, everybody talks about habits, right? I love the book Atomic Habits by James Clear. He's been on my show, right? Just, it's a great book. Everybody should definitely read that book because it's life-changing. But we talk about habits a lot. And have you seen in your personal life and with your clients that you work with that changing those habits really does create the change, but more importantly, the change that lasts to bring you to that next reiteration of self or life or whatever it is? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, habits only last if you keep the habits in place, if there's a structure for it. So I know that in James Clear's book, he talks about habit stacking. You know, it was something really, really simple. Like for me, the one that I did after reading his book was immediately I had a bath, I would clean it. And so I put the two habits together, and that's just now what I do. But it's it's having a structure. So I associate, you know, the cleaning product with the bath, and I make it happen. But if there isn't a structure for it, i.e. if you're going to do exercise with someone, you have someone who's doing it with you so you can be accountable, or you've got an alarm that goes off or some way of holding you accountable to that habit, it just isn't going to happen. So
go ahead.
I was going to say, at the end of the day, it's really about us. We can be taught all sorts of things. We can learn all sorts of things, but unless we put them into practice regularly, they'll make no difference.
It's funny because I end the show with information. Hopefully today's show inspires you. The information was useful, right? Information is a beautiful thing. If we do nothing with it, it's just information in our brain. Once we put it into action, that's when magic really starts happening. And that's what we're talking about. It's funny. I just had a meeting. I'm doing my 7-step class with one of my corporate clients, and we meet weekly. And, you know, the teams, I have 5 different groups going through it, you know, in a day. But it's funny because as we're going through each of the sub skills, executive team is saying, we need to create systems. And I said, here's the thing, you don't want to make it more complicated, but if we could create a system where here's the agenda in our database, here's a database of questions that are really good open-ended questions that we could build, right? And now we could go to that bank of information that we've created. Now the habit is just go to the bank of questions, pick the ones you need for that client conversation or whatever that situation is. And so one of the execs, I said in a meeting, I said, you know, Michael, it's about creating, refining what we're doing to the point where it's rinse and repeat, rinse and repeat. Once it becomes a habit, your client doesn't know it's a habit that the organization has put into place, but they're feeling that specialness because we created those habits with intention about the client journey. So you can build it, right? But how do you build it? So he said, oh my gosh, that's what we're doing. We're building all of these systems to support our clients, but to support our employees, to make it easier for them to support the client. So if we could create that ease, that's what you're talking about too. Then it becomes that new habit that I don't want to do it the old way. This is so much easier for me, and I'm getting more results, and I'm making more money, and I'm helping clients on a greater scale. That's what it's all about. But we have to stop and think and create those stackable, I like that word, stackable habits, systems, routines, processes that we could kind of lean into, and then rinse and repeat, rinse and repeat, rinse and repeat. Yeah. And that's like tying the shoe, learning to breathe. Well, not learning to breathe, breathing, walking. Yeah. We don't have to relearn everything. We could do that on an organizational as well as a personal side.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think the thing is, and certainly it was the case for me, that systems, boring. I don't want to do that. You know, I don't want to be told what to do, but actually systems work. I've got this really great routine in the morning. I get up, I get myself a glass of water, I put the kettle on, I steep a herbal tea, I then do some meditation. These are all habits that I've stacked. I do gratitude, I read 5 pages of a book, and I do my French before breakfast. And doing that every morning is so, so powerful. I'm really set up for the day, you know, and it just gives me such a great start. But you know, before that, I was like, you know, oh, I don't want a routine. You know, I don't want anyone telling me what to do. And I got to the point where I thought, what are you doing? Why are you behaving like a teenager? You're sabotaging your own life. You know what I mean? you know, I'm so glad because I saw it as boring. I'm creative. I don't want to do that. But actually, you know, things like that, structure, some sort of structure, it really, really works. Yeah.
And I'm glad you said that because creatives definitely have a harder time than someone like me. I love structure because then I don't have to think about it and I get so much more done, right? I'm a productivity hacker. You tell me, and it can make me more productive with time, effort, more free time, whatever it is I'm seeking, like sign me up. So I love systems and processes, but I hear that from my creatives, my clients, and you know, even the employees within my organizations that I work with. Well, I'm a creative. I don't like structure. And no one's saying every aspect of your life has to be bound in structure so you could be the most efficient all the time. It's not what we're saying. But if you can have these little pieces within your life that are structure set up in a structured way, you'll get more done, but you'll have more time for that freedom and creativity. You make room for it by doing this.
Exactly. That's the whole point, really, isn't it? But I think until you've done it, until you actually benefit from that structure that's been set up, and you kind of surrender yourself to, do you know what, actually, perhaps this will work. I'm going to try it out and see, and then see what. We don't realize how beneficial it is. And that's the thing, isn't it? We don't know what we don't know. So if we haven't experienced something, how are we going to know that?
And you're, I like the idea of that stacking. And I know that you do this with your clients as well. And the other thing I think I've heard you say, I think it was you, you say, just play with it, try, experiment. And if you don't like it, you don't have to do it, certainly, but experiment, play. And if this doesn't work, what will work, right? If your objective is to lose 5 pounds, you know, maybe you empty, maybe I would have to empty my cupboards out and only put, you know, healthy food in there, where someone else says, I'm not giving up all my junk food. Okay, well, what one thing do you want to keep? Right. So it's that idea of playing, experimenting. So you find what works for you, because, you know, no two people are the same.
Exactly. And I think the other thing is that if we feel deprived of something, then that's when we're going to really, really sabotage it. You know, we don't want to be told what to do. We don't want to be told no. But if we are, if we open up to the possibility of choosing powerfully rather than, you know, feeling that we ought not to eat something or we ought, you know, we have to exercise, you know, we stop using language like that and we allow ourselves to be free around, well, I could do this and I could do that. Which am I going to choose? And what's the outcome that I want? Do I want to, you know, lose that 5 pounds? Do I want to feel fit? Do I actually want a long, healthy life? Do I want to be around for my grandkids? You know, it's when we look at the impact of those little things. Yeah. I don't know if you've read the book, Connie, The Slight Edge. It's a really brilliant book. And it's all about the little things that are easy to do, but they're easy not to do. Like, you know, actually not going to the gym one day, you know, that's easy not to, you know, it's easy not to go. It's easy. It might be easier not to go than to go, but compounded over time, the not going is what's going to make a massive impact. You know, eating one pizza a week or twice a week maybe won't hurt that much, but actually you do that every day of the week. And so it's the little things that compounded over time make a massive difference to our life. And that's the thing. It's the difference between, you know, a pilot flying, you know, 1 degree off course, you could end up the other side of the world. Maybe not, my geography is a bit rubbish, but do you know what I'm saying?
I do.
You know, it's huge. It's absolutely huge. And we don't look at the long term, but when we do look at what we want and then look at what are the steps back for that, you know, what am I going to choose? Am I going to choose to have that or that? I can choose that and that's fine. Or I can choose that and maybe that'll get me nearer the outcome I want.
We have to be clear on what that objective is too, down the road. Like you were saying, I want to be healthy for my grandkids. You know, I don't have grandkids yet, but I do want to be healthy for my grandkids. Well, that means I have to start now, because as I'm aging, it gets harder to get into shape. It gets harder too, right? So fill in the blank for whatever it is. What do I need to do now with my diet, with my exercise, all of those things. And it's a choice. It really does. And if it's not that important to you, then continue as is, right? No one's saying you have to do anything because it's your life. It's your choice. What kind of changes do you see? Like, are there repetitive things that your clients are coming to you with? Like, I want to change or I want to create. Like, are there similar themes?
Yeah.
There?
I think, you know, a lot of people who are suffering with anxiety, who are maybe not speaking up, who are, you know, just feel like, you know, they should be perfect and there's something wrong with who they are. Maybe what I was saying before about not being good enough, I think that's so common. You know, they want to do something, but they just feel a little bit scared, or they don't feel good in their body, or they just don't like themselves. You know, I think it's common for people to feel scared of something, and being scared is fine, isn't it? But if you want to stay feeling scared and not doing anything about it, that's of course a choice, but actually there are always ways through it. But ultimately it does involve stepping out on that skinny branch, you know, or choosing to go to the gym rather than not go to the gym, or choosing to speak to that person you're a little bit nervous of speaking to and feeling nervous anyway, but doing the thing.
It's funny, as you were saying that, this popped into my head. Pre-COVID, I was interviewed for an organization, one of my clients on their website. They spotlighted businesses and they, you know, loved me. So they wanted to spotlight me, which was just wonderful, right? And so I had the questions in advance. There were questions about me and my business. So I knew all the answers, Julie. I knew them all. And I even had the outline of the questions they were going to ask. And I'm driving there and I remember calling my husband. He goes, what's the matter? I thought you had the interview today. I go, I do. He goes, what's the matter? And I go, I don't think I could do it. Had a full on panic attack. He goes, what are you talking about? What questions are they going to ask you? I go, about my business and me. And he goes, don't you know the answers? I'm like, uh-huh. But what if they ask me a question? I go, home at home at home. He says, you speak for a living. What is wrong with you? I'm like, but what if I don't right? That negative record player, because they were recording me. Meanwhile, I train every day and I don't worry about what I'm going to say because I know my stuff in this. And I still knew my stuff for this interview, Julie. I had a full on, I was sweating in the car driving thinking I'm going to cancel. How ridiculous is that? So just one more piece to this puzzle. I had my annual at my, you know, my OBGYN. And so I was reiterating this. We're friends, right? We've known each other 30 years. My kids, you know, she delivered my kids. And I said, you know, Dr. Lambert, you never believed. And I reiterate, and she says, oh my God, that happened to me a month ago. Now she is a well-renowned in her field that everybody, like she, people across the country reach out to her for, and she sits on panels and all this stuff. And she had a panel discussion in New York where she was the key panelist. And she said, that happened to me, Connie, all the way up. I almost had to pull over and throw up. And I said, what's wrong with you? You're amazing. She goes, yeah, what about you? You couldn't even answer questions about, and we giggled and yeah. We talked, it's the imposter syndrome that we feel that we're not good enough. That what if they really see who I am? What if they think I'm a fraud? Because I am a fraud. We're not. So these are the things you're talking about, right? So it's common.
It is common. And I think that, in fact, I don't know if you know, Connie, but I used to suffer from panic attacks. I was doing a voiceover for IKEA. I'd worked with them for a very long time. I used to love working with a client. On this occasion, I was pregnant with my daughter, Katie. She's now 25. I was in the voiceover studio and I suddenly had this kind of rush come over my body, which must have been the hormones looking back. But I was in that moment, I was rendered speechless, and I actually was so terrified by it, probably only lasted seconds, but it felt like forever, that I had this thought, oh my goodness, I hope that doesn't happen again. Oh my goodness, that was so frightening. What if it happens again? And of course, it played over and over and over in my mind like a loop. I kept focusing on it. And the more you focus on, the more you get the outcome that you're focused on. And sure enough, I developed so much anxiety. I had what I labeled panic attacks. And in the end, I went to see a hypnotherapist desperately because I thought, this is my life. This is my life. I'm just someone who suffers from panic attacks. And I felt like my life got smaller and smaller and smaller. Mm. Before that, I felt confident and great. Anyway, working with the hypnotherapist, we shifted that behavior. And you know, so those habits changed, but it just came from nowhere. But it was all about, you know, because we're human, aren't we? And stuff can trigger us. But actually, it is all about focus. And when you focus on the thing you don't want, like you were focused for temporarily on it was going to be awful. And, you know, with that interview, you know, if you'd carried on with that, maybe the outcome would have been different, and even though that's not who you are.
Yeah. And it's funny because most things we do have do-overs. So the example of the recording, they could have edited the recording on the IKEA. They could have said, hey, do it again. You had a little bit of a brain fart there. Like, do it again. So unless you're a surgeon, you don't have do-overs, right? You're like, you better get it right the first time.
Yeah. Oops. Yeah.
Oops, like we don't want to nick a nerve here. However, you and I are not surgeons for a reason, right? No. So, but anything we really that we do, you do get you do overs or you can fix that little error. Yet at the moment, you think that if I make this mistake, it's the end of my life. So yeah. I'm sure everybody listening is thinking, oh, we've all had those moments. And if you say you haven't, I think that's, you know, you're kind of lying to yourself because we've all had those moments where we're questioning yeah. ourselves. My last question, because we're almost out of time, but I know you work with women specifically over 50 as per right my intro. How do you feel like you help them create those changes that are sustainable?
So I do that through EFT, which, if you don't know, is an emotional freedom technique. It's a simple tapping technique. I do it with life coaching. I also have some digital products as well, which help my clients. But also I have skincare and nutrition, and really all of those things put together can give women over 50, particularly, you know, amazing health and well-being, self-confidence, and you know, the sense that they can accept who they are and make choices from that place, and also feel good about, you know, how they feel, how they look, you know, and start to inhabit more of themselves. You know, one of the things that is really important to me, because I've spent my life being paid to be other people, is to be myself. Mm. And it's taken me a very long time to really feel happy in my own skin. And I think that's the best feeling. And I know that you feel happy in your skin, Connie, and it's great, isn't it?
It is. And you know what? I don't want to be anybody else. And, you know, I'm not perfect, certainly, but I, you know, I think I'm a pretty good person, right? I think I'm kind and caring and all those things. And it's funny because, you know, you said feel good, look good, whatever that is to you. But, you know, like the Arbonne, you have food, you know, like the fizzy strips, right, for the energy that are natural versus doing the power drink thingies, right, which are really not good for your heart and all those pieces of the puzzle, that, you know, the creams and stuff like that for anti-aging. When you look good, I think you do feel good and your whole energy changes. I think you show up differently when you're in your body fully. And I think that you deal with the mental, the physical, and then of course the topical, right? The skin piece of it, as well, which is really important. You know, what we ingest will impact our complexion and our skin and all of those anti-aging things that we want, right? You have to put good nutrients in your body, but topical. Every day, there's so many contaminants in the world that we need some of these more holistic and what's the word I'm thinking of that work, right? Like, so if I'm looking for anti-aging,
yeah,
it works, but it's also good for the environment and good for our bodies that we're not taking on these additional toxins. So
I just want to clarify something, because, you know, because anti-aging, I think, is bandied about a lot, but actually, you know, we are going to age. And for me, it's not about anti-aging. And I know we say it, I've said it, you know, but actually it's about aging well, because we are going to age. If we're lucky enough to age, great. Amen. You know, be grateful for that, but actually age well. And I think that one of the things that has it be so powerful, the whole thing, is that, you know, we are sort of a mind, body, skin, aren't we, human? And, yeah. You know, the more that if we have a great attitude and we laugh like you and I do, and, you know, we treat ourselves well, and we, you know, then I think that life works. And, and isn't that what we want, you know, to have a life that works and means something to us and the people around us?
And it feels good when someone says, how old are you? And I really giggle when men do it. They go, wait, what did you say? And and I remember, you know, when I speak a lot on Zoom, and I'll say, you know, 40 years in financial sales and client, you know, but, and you see in the chat, did she say 40 years or 4 years? It's really, and I just giggle. I go, yes, I see the chat. It's 40 years. And, you know, I'm in my 60s. And then the men are like, wow, like what? So I giggle. But here's the thing. And the other thing I wanted to comment on is you said, treat yourself well. That doesn't mean that you and I go for facials every other day. Like, who could afford that? Treating yourself well is loving yourself, treating yourself with kindness, resting when you're tired. Remember before I said I worked all the time, and my son said that recently. He goes, oh, you just work all the time. And that wasn't okay. That did not land okay for me. That's not how I want to be remembered. Yeah, mom worked all the time, right? So treating yourself good is giving yourself the grace to say, you know what? I am tired today. Go and take a bath, or go for a walk, or go take your dog for a walk, or whatever it is. Get your nose out of the grindstone and live your life. So when we say treat yourself well, Julie and I are going out spending millions on ourselves. It's just living a good life that we're happy. Every day is a happy day. And I think, well, I mean, some days aren't, but, you know, whatever, but life is life. But for the most part, 80% of the time, I really believe I'm happy with my life, with who I am, with my friends, with my colleagues like Julie, with the show and the people I get to interview. These things matter. And I think that's also that those little adds up to the big outcomes that we're looking for in life, you know?
Couldn't agree more. Absolutely, Connie. Yeah.
Julie, I love you. Your humor, your energy, you're gracious and you're kind. I think you're brilliant at what you do. And I love that you found your zone of genius to support women and, you know, men, dudes. If you think that, you know, Julie can help you, by all means, you know, reach out, because she's really good at what she does, and she does it in a very loving and compassionate way. And that's another thing. When you pick a coach, I think they have to resonate with you at, like, almost, I'm going to say, the soul level, values level, whatever it is. But if you want to laugh and you want to grow, like, to me, Julie, you're my gal. So here's Julie's email. If you have a question specific for her, it's Julie Mann with two N's, biz, B-I-Z, at gmail.com. Website is habitfixer.com. And if you go to habitfixer.com, you have a free gift on the website. Can you tell everybody what that is?
Yes. So basically, it's a 6-minute download. So it's a stress buster. So, you know, I think sometimes people are so busy being busy, and some of them are like a bit of a badge, that they forget to take time for themselves. And a few minutes each day, even if it's only 6 minutes, which is what this Stress Buster MP3 is, just time to kind of close your eyes and just listen to me talking, just to kind of de-stress and then refocus on whatever you're doing afterwards. So you can, something you can download to your phone. So go to my website and download it.
I love that, Julie. And here's the thing, like you were saying, you do that while you're making your tea, right? You're kind of doing your morning thing. You meditate 6 minutes. It takes for you to make your coffee or whatever that is, to just sit quietly, listen to the download. And the other thing I personally would use it at the end of the day to kind of end and quiet the mind. And 6 minutes, you have 6 minutes before you climb into bed and shut your eyes and go to sleep. So I would use that at the beginning of the day and the end of the day, one to focus and then one to decompress. So I love that. Thank you so much. Everyone check it out again, habitfixer.com. Of course, I'll put all of the links in the show notes for easy access, but Julie, thank you for being on and sharing your story and being vulnerable with us. But letting people know that, you know, there is a brighter tomorrow if you choose it. It's all about choice, right?
Yes. Thank you so much, Connie. And thank you everyone for watching.
Yes. Jules, thanks so much. I love you, my friend. So thanks. Keep on rocking your cool self over there in England. And I hope you will join me weekly as we question, build, and discover together, no matter what change you're going through. I really do hope my guests and I, in our conversation and the topics we cover, they move you, they inspire you to take action. Like I said during the show, information's a beautiful thing. You got to do something with it. Once you put it into action, the reaction, the magic starts happening. So I hope that you take some of Julie's ideas, my ideas, whatever we talked about today, implement them in your life, download the free gift, the Stress Buster. And of course, reach out to Julie, connect with her on her website, get her newsletter, all those kinds of things. It's information that'll be utilized going forward beyond what the show has brought to you today. So Julie, thank you again. Thank you all for tuning in. You've been listening to Enlightenment of Change with me, your host, Connie Whitman, on webtalkradio.com. I truly wish you a week filled with inspiration, love, and joy. Take one step forward and come out of your comfort zone. Like Julie said, trust me, magic really is waiting for you. You just have to open the door and step in. I love you all. I'll see you next week. Have a great one. Bye.